Hello and welcome to another episode of the Economist podcast. This is Tariq.
Hi guys, this is Jant.
And we are here for our annual ritual of an episode where we typically gather at the end of the year and review our favorite books from the year.
Yes, pretty much.
So we've done this for the last 4 years running, and this is the fifth edition on this podcast. This time with a slight twist. Usually we do about 8 or 10 books that both of us have read, or at least one of us has read and really liked and thinks there is a lot of value to be derived out of reading that for somebody listening to the podcast who has not read the book from the world of economics and finance. Even if you are from outside the world of economics and finance, learnings and interesting ideas can be taken out from those readings. But Jant, this time there is a twist.
Yes, this time there is a twist. We thought rather than self-indulging in our own list, we have gone around, spoken to a few interesting people, trying to gauge what they have read and what is that one book which has stood out in the year, like a best wow book.
The wow read for the year for them. And these are people who are from the industry. So we have columnists, we have authors from the world of economics and finance, we have
fund manager, we have research heads,
we have wealth management experts.
So not only India, global also.
So we try to get as many diverse points of view as possible, because we also have a selfish interest in that. We get a few reading recommendations out of
yes,
all of those.
Yes, pretty much.
Because those are not all books we have read either. And we, of course, will also talk about our favorite books of the year.
Yes.
But first, let's move on and listen to what our guests have to say about their top 8 reads of the year.
Hello, my name is Michael Batnick, and I am the Director of Research at Ritholtz Wealth Management. I don't keep a list of how many books I read, but I probably did about one a week, and one that really stands out to me was Rocket Men by Robert Kurson, and I was excited to read this book because he is the author of another one that I really enjoyed called Shadow Divers. And Rocket Men is the story of Apollo 8, the first American space mission to go to the moon in 1968. And what was incredible about this book is that it's not just a story of NASA or the astronauts or the engineering, but it really told the story of the country. And the United States was in a very, very delicate spot in 1968 between some of the racial wars that were going on and Vietnam, and this mission really galvanized the country. I thought it was really interesting that Neil Armstrong, famously, who landed on the moon in Apollo 11, was one of the backup astronauts to this mission. And I just want to read one part of the book that really, really stood out to me. And this was when they were on their way to the moon. Here we go. Outside Anders's window, any trace of sunlight had disappeared, and as his eyes adapted to the intense darkness, he began to see stars. It seemed like a million of them, so many he couldn't even pick out constellations. The sight took his breath away. He looked to his right, through the window beside him, hungry for more, but suddenly there were no stars anymore. All of them had gone dark. There was just a giant black hole, as if part of the universe had vanished. The hair on the back of Anders' neck stood up, and for a moment it felt as if his heart had stopped, until he realized that he wasn't looking at a missing piece of the universe at all. He was looking at the moon. A few seconds after that, Apollo 8 disappeared behind it. So this author, Robert Kurson, really knows how to tell a story, and this book did just that. So I highly recommend it, and I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Monica Hallam. I'm consulting editor with Mint, and I work in the area of household finance policy and regulation. I'm also the author of the best-selling book, Let's Talk Money, published by HarperCollins. It's been increasingly difficult to read as social media is all pervasive, but I continue to read, and I read because I want to keep learning. From the set of all the books that I read this year, I think easily the best book has been Factfulness by Hans Rosling. I like the book because it uses data and logic to prove that our current cynicism and pessimism about the state of the world is quite misplaced. Rosling shows how this is actually the best time to be alive and how we should not allow half-truths based on perception rather than data and evidence to color our minds. The book makes you think harder and it makes you examine your own biases. It's a definite must-read for me.
Hi everyone, my name is Ronak Onkar and I work with PPFAS Mutual Fund. I head the research team and I'm also a co-fund manager in the fund. The book I really enjoyed reading, more than enjoy, I was really awed by reading the book. It's called Autonomy, written by a person named Lawrence Burns. And instead of giving you a summary of the book right now, I'll say that if you want to pick two books out of one book out of this, you should pick the second book, Autonomy, written by Lawrence Burns, as the must-read book for the year. Because up until this time, I mean, since a child, I was always seeing cartoons where there were cars which drove themselves, robots who did things on their own, and I was always amazed, you know, how is it possible? Because in my home, I could see a dumb computer which was used for playing video games or something like that. Whereas I'm seeing on the cartoon that some futuristic scenario where there are cars which drive themselves or there are these autonomous robots who do whatever they are told to do and the complete task for you, like a butler or something like that. And it always amazed me, and that led to my fascination to read about science fiction over a period of time. And when you read science fiction, when you read Isaac Asimov, you will see the iRobot series there. It's all about autonomous and AI and everything. The moment you see all those things, you realize that, okay, what sort of reality is possible when all these things can come together? And until I read the book and until just a couple of months ago, I always believed that a self-driving car, you know, a car which has no driver in its driver's seat, and yet it drives around taking passengers and moves around the city just like a normal car. If you see the car from outside, you will not realize until you see the driver's seat that there is nobody sitting there. So this kind of a vision for me was purely science fiction or just a science project, you know, because I knew that there were some tests going on somewhere in the US or other parts of the world where people were trying to create this autonomous vehicle. But to see an autonomous vehicle on the street among normal cars, among normal pedestrians, and driving as if it's a normal car was something I always believed was 10-year out or a science fiction thing which might happen someday. And up until I read the book and up until I read about this project of autonomous cars and the pilot testing that is going on, this book covers the entire industry of autonomous vehicles and what kind of research has been put into it for the past 20-plus years. The book is rather interesting because it's written by a person named Lawrence Burns, who was formerly from the automotive industry. He used to work in General Motors. And he brings a perspective of understanding autonomous vehicles from the point of what auto industry thinks and how the technology industry thinks. And he recounts quite animatedly the contests where a lot of research scientists were invited to participate by the Department of Defense in the US to create an autonomous vehicle which will be used by the Department of Defense in a war scenario. And out of these contests came these different ideas and different engineers approaching the problem from different angles, and how one company out of that, which is now known as Waymo, which is a subsidiary of Alphabet, which also owns Google. So Waymo came out of this particular project where all the engineers, and most of the engineers who are mentioned in the book, they actually participated in creating the different forms of technology which will be required for an autonomous vehicle or self-driving vehicle to drive itself. And it's quite amazing to see from the first stumbling blocks, you know, like a child who learns to walk, how an autonomous vehicle learns to see the road, learns to see the world, how it perceives the world, how it perceives its task at hand, and how it drives itself. And from that stumbling and falling child who suddenly starts to run like a marathoner, it's quite amazing to now see those cars running on the street like a normal car. So what I found fascinating about the book, apart from the basic history and the engineering of all these things, is the different characters who are involved. You know, like normally when we look at technology, we always see technology as something that we use. But rarely we get a chance to learn about how that thing was really made. And when you go into engineering, you realize how astounding and deep the research is and how these people who are involved are driven and motivated towards a goal which probably you'll never understand. Look, why would somebody want to put so many hours behind such an idea? Well, clearly it seems like science fiction. And how to marry that with a business case. So all these people who are involved have different approaches and how they come cohesively to work under one project and deliver this particular idea. And if you go on Google or YouTube, you will know that you will just search for Waymo or self-driving car, and you can see all these videos which are like a couple of months old or even a month old. You will see live projects running around, and you must have also read in the news that Waymo has started a self-driving Uber-like service, which is quite interesting. The point that when I was dreaming a couple of months back about, okay, this might be 10 years out, and suddenly you see it's already here. So I think that book makes a very fascinating read, not just from the business and economics of auto industry point of view, but also from the engineering and the characters of the engineers who are involved and how they deal with coming up with this astounding project. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Shweta Jain, and I'm a certified financial planner. I'm the founder and CEO of Investography, where we do financial wellness and financial planning for our clients. I do love reading and writing. You can find various articles of mine online and in print. My book, Conversations with Money, is also available if you are a new investor and would like to read more of my stories with money. My favorite book is usually the one I'm reading right now. So my favorite book right now is 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. But some of my other favorite books are Thinking Fast and Slow, and Sapiens, Homo Deus, books by the same author, Yuval Noah Harari. These are books that I've not only read, but I've also gifted. Today we talk about his latest book, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. This book offers observations about the conduct of individuals as well as on society. So for somebody who likes to observe and experiment, this book is fantastic. There are certain chapters in the book that celebrate human wisdom, but there are also certain chapters which talk about the role of human stupidity in how we have progressed as a society. This book is for somebody who wants to know where we are heading, the way we are living right now, where are we heading, because liberalism is losing credibility during this revolution that we're seeing in information technology and biotechnology. And they confront us with the biggest challenges that our species has ever seen. We are at a very interesting time in our evolution itself. This will undermine both our liberty and equality for which we've fought for ages, and we've come to this stage. We might also suffer from exploitation, and that is something that we are usually scared of. But this book offers a perspective where we might not suffer from exploitation, but from something which is even worse, being irrelevant. Our ability to tell stories and to ensure that a number of people believe in it is the secret to our success as a species, according to Yuval, and I couldn't agree more. But the future may not be as promising as we think. In a world where we believed that robots would not take over us or could not replace us, due to our empathy, is now changing, is now being challenged. Because with machine learning, it might be possible that machines get better at even empathy. So where will our niche be then? We follow various traditions which are explored in this book, often meaninglessly according to us, or because we are obedient, we listen to our parents, and that's why we follow some routines, rituals, and traditions. But this book helps us make some sense of the past, why certain rituals came into being, how they are or are not relevant anymore. Yuval's ability to question everything without actually offending somebody or something is a matter of tact, and I hope to learn that also from this book. You know less than you think is one of the many things that I learned from this book, and I think this is something that we should focus on more. Be humble is something else that I don't think we practice enough of, and that Yuval believes is something that we should definitely be doing more and more. When we believe for ages that we are authentic and unique, neuroscientists have now proven that there are parts of the brain which controls what and how we think, and these can be tinkered with, and where we thought we were authentic throughout, or ourself is authentic, this shows that There are medicines and processes that can be tinkered with it. So this is something else that we could think of. For those of you who haven't seen the movie Inside Out, that movie has also been discussed in this book. One of my favorite movies as well, in the way it was approached by Disney. Continuous education is something that we've been talking about for a while now, that we have to learn and keep learning, keep relearning as well, some of these things. But in this book, Yuval talks about how continuous education, not just in our field, but we should be able to change our vocation multiple times in life, and we could be heading towards that scenario. Some of the skills that we needed earlier are not needed today. This might continue, but the skills may go out or get outdated much faster than we have been used to. For example, we were taught to learn information, but that was valuable because then information was scarce. Today, we are flooded by information. There are also conflicting reports that we hardly know what to believe in. So now we need the ability to make sense of information, to tell the difference between what is important and what is not important. It is time for experts in various areas to work together rather than in silos to better understand ourselves and our minds, else we will soon have algorithms make up our minds for us. The last thing that I want to talk about is being present in the moment. This is something that we have forgotten to do and is becoming increasingly difficult too with all the distractions of today. While sapiens explored our past and Homo Deus explored possibilities of the future, 21 lessons for the 21st century helps us navigate today so that we build a future that we want to.
I'm Saurabh Mukherjee. I'm the CIO at Marcellus Investment Manager. And amongst my two favorite books this year, the first one, I think, was Competition Demystified by Bruce Greenwald. It's an old classic. I think it's been in the market for at least 6 or 7 years. But I happened to chance upon it this year. And I think what's special about the book is that Greenwald simplifies comparative advantage. He simplifies the Michael Porter framework to a level where you can apply it right away in your investing. And he basically says that barriers to entry is the crux of any great business. But whilst Greenwald's book is a powerful investment tool for professional fund managers such as myself, I think the big simplifier of an abstract concept comes from Cal Newport. He wrote a book last year called Work. I read it earlier this year. And I think in terms of bringing home a simple concept of why concentrating on whatever we are doing, focusing on whatever we are doing, why that is a powerful skill, why that can transform our careers, I think Cal Newport deserves a lot of credit for bringing home a useful concept for all of us. He's drawn upon work by plenty of other psychologists. For example, Flow by Nihaly Csikszentmihalyi, a classic from 1990. Newport draws upon that. But all credit to Cal Newport for taking everybody else's work and creating a concept called deep work, which I think any of us can apply in our daily lives and become more effective professionals. So deep work is my favorite read for 2015.
Hey, I'm Satish Shah. I am a director in 9010 Financial Planners Private Limited. So wealth management and financial planning is my bread and butter. I help people to become wealthy. So the reading is one of the biggest passion of my life. I always want it all the time in the world so that I can finish all my reading list, which incidentally, whatever present holdings I have done my calculation as it will take at least another 20-25 years for me to read whatever books I already own, right? So apart from that, if I add some of the books which are there in my wish list, I think I have to come on this earth multiple times. Right? So the book I'm going to talk to you today is called Algorithms to Live By. It's most of a logical, mathematical, algorithmic books, right? The how we can apply the algorithm in our life. It talks about various algorithms. Let's assume if you are searching for a house, when is the time you stop looking for a house and take the house which is the best? Or when, if you're looking for a parking place, when do you stop and park the car, or would you just go on searching for the parking? So they give interesting algorithms in that book. Say also there is a tip on time management. There is a tip on sorting out if you have lots of books or piles of papers. How do you sort out more efficiently? It's really wonderful, and my friend Jayant will be very happy to know that this, when you keep everything in, when I see his table, it's always messy, right? So he tells that, that is the way it should be. But sometimes I tell him that you need to sort it out. It looks bad, but he says that it's fine. But algorithm, this book has an interesting perspective. Actually, it is not bad. It is one of the better way. If you really arrange everything, you will struggle to find some of the things which you want. So the computer has this method called last recently used, right? When you keep things, and if you use that last recently used method, the most, whatever you use most, will always be there in front of you, right? That's the algorithm which tells you that how you should use this method. Also, there are more things, and also I want to also tell my friend Jayan that one more thing in this book which clearly tells that one thing at a time always works. He will be always at 100 things, right? So it's one thing at a time is always a better algorithm than doing many things at a time. So plus and minus for Jayant. Then there is something called explore and exploit. We in life keep on exploring, and we fail to exploit the things what we used to explore. Say maybe we are into what do I say? Some people are in the process of earning money and not using that money, that because they think that it can be done sometime in the future. But exploring and exploiting what you have done is equally important, right? So this is one book which can give you a practical suggestion, practical ways in which you can manage your day-to-day life, take decisions, even including how to win a lottery. It has interesting perspective. So that's why I liked being a logical person. I like that. So thanks, Jayant, for giving the opportunity. Thank you.
Hi, this is Morgan Housel. I'm a partner at the Collaborative Fund. And I read a lot of good books in 2018. One that really sticks out, though, is a book called Walt Disney, An American Original by Bob Thomas. It's a biography of Walt Disney, who, of course, we all know who he is. And it was a really fascinating book because, again, we all know who Walt Disney is, but there's so much, I think, that the public does not know about Walt Disney, the person, what kind of man he was, what kind of business person he was, and how he created the incredible success that he did. And what really stuck out to me was this idea that Walt Disney really did not care that much at all about the business side of his business. He was absolutely passionate to an amazing degree about creating good content, good cartoons, creating the best cartoons in the world. And he was unmatched in his creativity and his drive to get that done. But actually making the business work, actually making the numbers work, was something that he didn't have a lot of interest in, so much so that he ran a lot of his business ventures into the ground. And if it were not for his brother, Roy Disney, kind of running the day-to-day business side of things, the Disney Corporation would have failed long ago. This is especially because a lot of their the growth took place inside of the Great Depression in the 1930s. So that was a really interesting aspect of it. And I think we see that in a few other well-known entrepreneurs these days. A few examples. When Mark Zuckerberg created Facebook, he actually says, there's a quote out there where he says, you know, he was not interested in the business side of it. He was not building Facebook to make money, is what was his quote. He was really focused on creating a great product And of course, now Facebook is a great business and it's a cash machine. But his focus early on was just creating a great product without trying to really focus on maximizing earnings. And so I think there always has to be a balance between the two. But you see this pattern come up once in a while where some of the most successful business people in the world are just absolutely obsessed to an amazing degree with their product, with their art, and with their customers. I think that's probably the most important part, without really focusing that extensively on the business aspect of it. Now, if you don't focus on the business aspect of it, or if you don't hire someone who will, it will eventually come around to bite you. But I think that was the most interesting part of Walt Disney's biography that stuck out to me.
At the outset, let me thank Jayan to give me this opportunity to talk about a book that I've recently read. And I think it's a phenomenally good book. The title of the book is Out of the Maze: A Simple Way to Change Your Thinking and Unlock Success. The book is written by Dr. Spencer Johnson, who wrote a classic, a bestseller, Who Moved My Cheese? It's very unfortunate that the world lost Dr. Johnson in 2017. This book probably is the last ever piece that we've ever seen from Dr. Spencer Johnson. Let me just start with the year 2018 to begin with. As an author of a few books myself, 2018 happened to be a phenomenally successful year, as three of my books were published in this year, and one of the books, one out of these three, was also translated in Gujarati. So that way you can say three books, but including an additional language, there are four. I missed the target that I had set for myself by one book. I had decided to write five. A similar experience happened in case of reading also, because I wanted to read 60 books for the year, and I think I'll end the year with 53. So I'm short of my target. But what I read were some extremely, extremely good books. And some of the books are written by some very close friends or some known people. So that way also 2018 was a good year, because good number of books in personal finance came out in India also. The book by Monica Hallan, for example, Let's Talk Money. A couple of books by Gaurav Mashruwala came out. One was about risk in investment. Then the other was a brilliantly narrated book on various economic terms translated in terms of personal finance. There's another wonderful book Gaurav wrote. Kiran Telang wrote a book called Mindful Retirement. Yogin Sabnis, Jitendra Solanki, Shilpi Johri, Devdutt Tanokar. So many friends also wrote some very nice books on personal finance during this year, 2018. And so that way also I think the year was very good overall. The following is a letter Spencer composed in the final stages of his illness, showing just how much he had embraced the principles in this book. Now, this illness happened to be a pancreatic cancer, a tumor in his pancreas. And he says, a letter to my tumor. Hello, tumor. I love you now. I used to fear and fight you so that I could defeat you. Then I looked at my beliefs to see if they were more about what I loved or what I feared. Clearly, they were about what I feared. And I love how I have learned to love you, which seemed like a strange idea to me. How much richer my life has become, because while I am sick and realize I could die soon, I have become a much more appreciative, loving person, much close to my family and friends, with a greater sense of purpose, and have accelerated my spirituality. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Dr. Spencer Johnson. I may strongly recommend that everybody should consider reading this book. Thank you.
Well, that was quite the list of books, Jerry.
Yes, pretty much. So many interesting books.
I mean, it covers everything from the automobile industry to all of mankind.
To Apollo space explorations.
So that is quite the spread. And now the moment of truth, gents. Let's get on to our selections for the year 2018. We'll go with you first. Why don't you talk about your favorite book from 2018?
So I have read quite a few books, relatively less compared to last year. But if you see, I'll pick my recent read. I just wrapped up 2 days ago. So it is Saudi
America. It has nothing to do with recency bias, by the way. We know recency bias. Adjusted for that. And this just happens to be the best Jeff has read.
So, I mean, it is crisp, short. It tells up what's happening. So the book I have chosen is Saudi America by Bethany McLean. So it portrays how the U.S. shale boom has lasted for recently from past 5-6 years, how U.S. from being energy dependent, it is going on to become energy dominance in the field of gas and oil. So this tells us about the story of how fracking, getting oil and gas out of the untapped resources of US, which was always present there because of lack of technology and cheap capital because of Federal Reserve. And it links everything. It's a lot of moving balls, which you wouldn't even have thought of that in those angles, wherein like a Fed would have helped. It's something like
the shale boom.
Yeah, shale boom. So something like what junk bonds did, Barbarians of the Gate, the late 80s. The same thing what Fed lower interest rates have done to the shale financing companies, and how the Wall Street financing these loans leading to boom in oil and gas, and how that has panned out. And it talks about
something, of course, Bethany McLean specializes in, because she
financial engineering, baby.
She has written two of the best books where you could understand financial engineering as a layperson. There was the book on Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, which she co-authored. And of course, she has also written, or rather co-authored again with Jonas Zira. Our apologies to Joe.
Sorry, we missed your name.
So Joe, please forgive us about that. But Joe Rosera and Bethany McLean wrote a great book on the financial crisis called All the Devils Are Here. Again, they're very good at putting all these moving parts together, like you said.
So I'll just quote,
want to talk about a few more of those?
Yeah, I'll just quote one line from the book. So it says about someone known as Andrew Wilmot, a mergers and acquisition advisor at Purposed Ventures, says in the book that as oxygen is to life, capital is to oil and gas business. Who would have thought that? To shale revolution and gas would have depended on a cheap financing interest rate to get the business moving and lasting all this during the low interest regime. So that's a different angle which I haven't thought before reading this book. So that is one major takeaway for me from the book. And it's a fabulous read. I just sat over a day and finished in 2-3 straight sit out. So that's my pick for the year.
Okay. And any book that you finish in 2 days flat, I mean, obviously has to be a good book.
Yeah.
So kudos to Bethany McLean, and of course Saudi America then is the pick from Jent.
So what is your pick for the year?
All right, so my pick for the year is a book that actually also has won numerous awards, and I was thinking that should we just go with a mainstream choice or should we search for another, but honestly
the choice is yours.
It's just so good that it's unfair to say that just because it's mainstream we should avoid it. I mean, mainstream in the sense that it won a lot of awards. Primarily, it won the FT Business Book of the Year, Financial Times Business Book of the Year award this year.
Okay.
But like the hipsters say, I liked the book before it was cool.
Okay. So I trust you on that.
We're talking about John Carreyrou's fantastically investigated and researched Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley startup. The startup.
So is this the book about the founder who used to wear the turtleneck like Steve Jobs?
The female Steve Jobs, at least that's what she thought she would become.
Okay.
Elizabeth Holmes, who wanted to build one of the biggest companies in the world. She stumbled upon an idea of revolutionizing the how blood tests were done. And that's how she founded Theranos back in 2004 with another PhD student who was assisting her with her project of trying to get a patent on a particular kind of blood test where a small amount of blood could lead to an array of tests and a lot of information that could come out of that. Funny thing, it really did not work as much, and they built a whole business model around it and they tried to raise money through it. In 2006, the first CFO of the company, Henry Moseley, came with some concerns when he learned that the valuation of the firm, which is north of $150 million in their latest round of fundraising, was based on this idea that they would be able to sell this testing mechanism to pharmaceutical companies. But they had just had a disastrous meeting with Novartis where the test did not work, and obviously Novartis was not keen to go ahead with that deal. And Henry Moseley realized that they have been making the numbers up all along. So he said, we have to do something about it. We have to make it more realistic. And Elizabeth Holmes simply fired him on the spot. And that's just the first 6 pages of the book.
Wow.
So things escalate from there, and we get to know how things got so bad that eventually Holmes had to appear in court. Theranos had suits and countersuits. It was sued by its board members. It was sued by its investors. I mean, it was an absolute mess, and a classic example of Silicon Valley greed and the shenanigans that go along with it. And that's what makes this book fascinating. It's at the pace of a thriller. There's a lot of times when you look at the book and you think that how could this be actually happening? It sounds like Wolf of Wall Street.
Playing out in Silicon Valley?
Pretty much. So
are you looking forward for the movie, by the way?
Yes, I am, mainly because Jennifer Lawrence is going to play Elizabeth Holmes, and of all people, Adam McKay, the man behind The Big Short.
So I'm going out and tell him, shut up and take my money.
So we're going to be lining up for the premiere for sure. But and again, just like you mentioned about your book, Jayanth, I finished it in 2 days flat, because this was just unputdownable, really. So you must read it if you want to understand human nature, if you want to understand the nature of greed, if you want to understand how modern Silicon Valley works, the complex relationship between VCs, employees, founders, board members, and the myriad ways in which this becomes complicated, and the tough life that whistleblowers and honest and ethical people have inside of these ecosystems, where growth is everything, where valuations count for everything. I mean, and you
it's
might
crazy, see, crazy world out there.
You might see parallels to, you know, certain companies. I'm not going to name them.
And
Amazon
founders.
Competitors in India who have had similar issues. So it's interesting that way. This kind of reading has been my theme this year. I read a few other books which were similarly themed on either greed or scandal or things like that. But really, Bad Blood just simply stands out for its absolute thrill value, and not necessarily cheap thrill value. It's just that it sort of like, just you mentioned about Saudi America and how it changed the way you think about things. Silicon Valley will force you to reconsider some of these founding myths.
So I'm going to borrow this book when the movie is just about to release or when the trailer is out. So that's my promise. I'm going to read this.
All right. And I'm going to, of course, go and dive into Saudi America to see what's going on there.
Yes.
And it would be a crime to leave a Bethany McLean book out. She's as good a writer as she's an explainer of finance to lay people. We hope you enjoyed all these choices and knowing about these books. And of course, you can let us know if you have read any of them. How did you like them or not like them? What did you take away from those books? Or, of course, you can suggest new books to us.
Yes.
That you have read and you have really liked. There's just a small qualifier that it just has to be broadly from the world of business management, finance, economics. Broadly speaking, it doesn't need to be strictly from there. Any kind of lesson that you have taken is welcome. And we wish you happy reading in 2019.
Yes, keep the reading revolution going. And special shout out to all our interviewers who have given their list of books.
Yes, and have so taken time out time to talk out, about their favorite book. And we are hoping to do this more frequently and more often and with more people.
Yeah.
It was a real pleasure having all these people talk to us. So we just wanted to extend an individual special thanks to Saurav, to Monica, to Shweta, to Michael, to Morgan Housel, to Amit, to Satish, of course, who's a very good friend and a huge, huge friend of this podcast. That's why we gave him two books.
Yeah, he's only exception out there.
Everybody else got, even we got one.
Yeah.
So and Ronak. Thank you so much for contributing to this. And dear listeners, like I said, you can contribute too. So please send us your suggestions and we'll probably deal with it in the next episode of the Economist podcast, which we call Economics. So a mix of a lot of different economics ideas.
Yes. So looking forward to you guys. Please write it to us. So where do they write us on social media?
So they can follow us on at The Economist on Twitter, the E-C-O-N-O-R-M-I-S-T, Economist. Don't forget the R because otherwise we'll be tweeting at the magazine.
Yeah.
And we are also there on Instagram. We are at Economist. We put out some interesting stories and visuals out there. So if you want to explore some more economics, you can do that. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on any podcasting feed that you use, or you can go to audioboom.com/channel/economist. To subscribe or find our previous episodes and let us know how we are doing or if there is any particular economic story or idea that you would like to talk about or like us to talk about. We wish you a very, very happy new year and a very prosperous 2019.
Yeah, all the best, guys. May 2019 bring you all the luck you need.
And with that, we are at the end of this podcast. This is Tariq signing off.
See you guys. This is Jayant.
Have a great 2019 again.